From the creators of the hit kids podcast, Who Smarted, and Netflix's Brainchild, comes the adventurous world of Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH. Every episode follows Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs, making learning cool. This podcast is perfect for ages 6 and up. I'll tell you what, guys, I've listened to a few episodes and they're super fun. I really wish that my son had had this podcast when he was younger and growing up. These episodes drop every Thursday. They're only about 15 minutes or so. The series explores themes like the stories behind math, critical thinking, code breaking, problem solving, and more. Each one is stacked with so much laughter that your kids won't even realize how much they're learning. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids, and you can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back, and now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact. Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we are talking about a really important topic and a really difficult one. It's about grief. Grief can be really shocking when you get divorced. Like, if you perhaps were the one who, quote, wanted it, I hear all the time from my clients and people in my groups, like, I wanted this. Why am I so sad? Right? First of all, no one ever wants it. No one wants to divorce, right? We had a future that we imagined, that we dreamed of, and now we are being cut off from that, whether we have made the decision ourselves or it was made for us. We never imagined this, and here we are, right? So my guest today is Barry Liner Grant, and she is a grief specialist and an educator who joins me to help us understand how to process the grief that we feel when our marriages end. Barry divorced after a 17-year marriage, and she helps name grief and grieving for others who have experienced losing this imagined future. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Barry Liner Grant. Barry, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this really important topic, grief.
I mean, I think it's a topic that we don't talk about nearly enough, especially in non-death loss.
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things that I always hear from my clients, my followers, my Facebook group, whatever, is like, you know, quote, I wanted this, which of course they didn't, right? Why am I so, like, the grief is shocking to women in divorce, right? Like, it's the thing that we avoid, right? Because as you said, we don't talk about it enough. And it, like, hits them so suddenly and in the most shocking ways. Why do you feel like that is?
I think we equate grief and grieving with death loss. And truly, what grief is anything in which you imagined the movie of your life ending in a way that you had not planned for, you know, surprise ending.
Yeah.
that there is a loss of something, any loss, right? This could be anything that you imagined was going to turn out one way and has not. And this significant loss, even though the person that you are separating from, divorcing, is not in fact dead, in some ways, it's almost easier because you don't have to continue to communicate with them, continue a relationship. So it's so confusing because part of your future has died, mm-hmm. and yet some of it is still there in front of you. And so that's almost like having the anticipatory grief of someone with dementia, let's say. Like the person is there right in front of you, and yet you have also lost them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've lost the dream of what your life, you thought your life was supposed to be.
Whatever future you plan for yourself, that may be growing old together, that may mean those beautiful, you know, twilight years, that may mean empty nesting together, you know, whatever that is, no longer working, traveling the world. Maybe you made all these beautiful plans for when, and your for when has been shifted, changed, altered. The end of the movie is no longer what you thought it was going to be.
Right. So how did you get into this? Well, just give us a little bit of your story. I mean, you've been through divorce, right? Like this is you're on this podcast because you've actually gone through this, right?
I have. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first big loss that I experienced that was transformational was the loss of my mother, Ellen, in 1993. She died quite suddenly. Mm. She was also one of the first people that I knew in our orbit to ever have a divorce. I was in fourth grade and we were very, very first on the block, if you will, to have a family who had experienced divorce. Mm-hmm. I then, of course, you know, was trying to set myself up for a marriage that would not end in divorce the way my mom's had, but also we don't know that ever to be true in any relationship we try. Mm-hmm, I also admired what I learned from her about the way that she and my father, way back when in the 70s, crafted a really intentional way of separating and in remaining friends. I always say my parents invented conscious uncoupling.
Wow. Mine were like War of the Roses. Good yeah, for you. Yeah.
But I don't think it was until I lost my mother that I realized that a lot of the loss that I had experienced as a child of divorced parents, and then in my own divorce, how I would guide my own children through divorce, was indeed grief. Yeah. I don't think we named it that.
That's right.
And so I realized that there were so many non-death losses over the course of my life that I had experienced. And through my work with other women as a peer-guided mother loss support, I just knew in every experience that I had gone through that was shadowed in shame and not a topic that people felt comfortable discussing, that every time I opened up the door and started to have a conversation about any of the experiences that I had that felt curious, the light would shine right in, the door would swing wide open. And when I shared my vulnerability, when I shared my story, I believe we all need to be seen, heard, and witnessed in whatever loss we've experienced. Your loss matters. And yeah. I felt like when I got divorced, I lived away from home, also the home that I knew, without a mother. Mm. And so the people that I needed to depend on for my day-to-day life, living with my children on my own in a place away from the support I knew, was a whole new world of grieving. Yeah. I had to find a support system to craft a better way of mothering myself, sistering myself in order to show up for my children.
So were you already doing grief work when you got divorced, or
did as it, as a peer guide. Yeah. I moved into my training and went all full in after, because I realized that these sort of non-death losses needed a better place to live in modern day society.
Absolutely. Oh, so true. You mentioned shame, which I think is, I don't know if this is true, but I'm making it up, that shame is sort of is a very complicating factor in grief.
Absolutely.
Especially in divorce, right? The amount of stigma and shame that we carry through, you know, when we get divorced for a variety of reasons, right? For me, it feels like it compounds the grief in many ways, or it confuses it, or tell me your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I always say it's under the hood of fear. The shame lives under there. We look at our own success, if you will. We think that this is going to end in a way that is forever. And if life teaches us nothing more than knowing we have very little control over how much happens in our lives, we do have control over how we meet grief, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And in doing so, I think part of the shame is that we feel failure, and we feel that society does not support us in just something that changed about our relationship. And so because we know, you know, the societal norms, if you will, for marriage, I feel are the same unconditional ways in which we feel we are supported in grief. I think that all of these things create otherness, right? We like we have done something wrong, done something bad, and really we're making the best choice that we can for ourselves and our families if we can look at it like that. And have conversations like that, I think we would alleviate shame. But what we always say is name it to tame it, right? Mm-hmm. If we're not calling it what it is, you know, I am ashamed that my marriage didn't work out. I am also really happy and hopeful that I can have a new future that I imagine for myself.
Yeah.
Shame is a very complicated part of any journey, anything that we made the movie, we wrote the movie, we're in the movie, and all of a sudden it's not ending the way that we imagined.
Right.
And how does that make us feel? We're often looking at how society makes us feel from the outside in, but if we were to look at the inside out, that's where how can we alleviate the shame?
Right.
What can we release from feeling like society is looking at us from the outside in as if we have failed at something?
Yeah. And what's so, you know, I find it so fascinating that, like, you know, the divorce rate's pretty, you know, pretty up there given, right? And yet we all feel this shame. It's like, well, half of us are going through this. And I would hazard to guess that the half that aren't going through it are also not happy, right? There's like, and so like, Why are we carrying this shame? What is it that we are? And I think it's, you know, Pia Mellody talks about carried shame. And I think it's a really interesting concept, right? That, like, often, I know, like, in my marriage, right? I was not the one who should feel shame for this marriage not working out, because I was actually the one working on it. My husband was the one cheating on me and, like, fronting that he was doing the work on the marriage while also sleeping with God knows how many other women. Right. And so if I feel a shame, it's sort of like I'm carrying the shame that actually was his to be feeling. And
yes.
So if I'm carrying that shame and then it doesn't work or whatever it is, right? The you know, the relationship doesn't work. I'm also, if I'm carrying the shame of the relationship, I'm also carrying the expectation that I can fix it. That I'm like, that I'm somehow in control and in charge of that.
Yes. I think it's because we feel fundamentally flawed.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're made to feel that way. Right. I think, you know, embarrassment, humiliation, that's not something that we come out and share. It's something that we feel internally. Mm-hmm. And it's like this, a self-awareness also, as I said, where we're not naming what we feel because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And we don't even feel like we necessarily have anything to heal or mm-hmm. to, you know, that might not be, as you said, part of our recovering, but we need to sort of, to me, break the cycle by talking about divorce.
Right. Exactly. Let's talk like, right. Exactly. The only way that we uncover the shame and we sort of release us all from it is by just talking about it, which is what we're all doing. Right. Which is,
right.
You know,
yeah. Acknowledge that there have been mistakes, wrongdoings, maybe apologize, make amends. Like we do this in so many other ways in our lives. And yet in divorce, because children are sometimes involved, because money is always and usually involved. Like there's right. so many other things that we may have attached. But I think when we begin to bring these difficult conversations out of the shadow and into the daily vernacular, we then realize, you know, I'd have women, I'm sure you have too, over and over, who kind of in secret were like, hey, come on over. I see you on the other side of this. And I see hope. I always say I'm a hope dealer.
I love it.
I see hope. And they're asking in secret. But when we get together in groups or honest conversation, we can tell somebody what we're feeling bad about, or that we've had pain around the shame, and we can learn to practice self-forgiveness, be open about our feelings, practice self-compassion, think about our self-talk. You know, how are we talking to ourselves about this? Like you said, that wasn't even mm-hmm. mine to carry.
Not right.
We cheated.
Exactly. Right.
But somehow society has made us feel shame because we are part of the X percent of people for whom a marriage failed.
We failed. Right. We failed. Right. And then there's the shame of like, well, he cheated on me. So what was wrong with me that I wasn't enough?
Right.
And, you know,
right.
I tried to lose the weight. I tried to like, all of the,
right.
all
but
of
what,
the gross but things.
Exactly. And what we get into like the nitty gritty of like, what experience from childhood makes mm-hmm. that feel so awful? Like what else is that tapping that it's may not even be the divorce? And that sometimes
right.
is like where our work is, right?
That is so where our work is. I want to talk about that on the other side. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. As parents, we may have eyes in the back of our heads, but we don't always have that same level of visibility when our kids aren't in our care. Co-parenting with an ex who has an alcohol problem can be really scary. Trust me, I know. SoberLink has been a longtime sponsor of this show because I wholeheartedly believe in what it does. It's designed to make parenting time safer. So how does it work? Your co-parent will use a portable device to test at scheduled times. It has built-in facial recognition that confirms their identity. Tamper sensors flag any attempts to cheat, and results get sent instantly to your phone, giving you peace of mind that your kids are with a sober parent. SoberLink's court-admissible data is unbiased, objective, and it speaks for itself, allowing you to focus more on co-parenting and less on disputing claims about sobriety. Keep your kids safe when they're not under your roof. Visit SoberLink.com/DSG to learn more and get $50 off of your device. That's SoberLink.com/DSG. You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's No Prep, No Mess Meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos. Really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. All right, let's talk about that.
The root cause of the experiences.
The root cause of the shame and like.
I'm not a shame expert. I'm really not a shame expert, but I really feel even in grief and loss, when you look under the hood and think about it and how much shame I carried, like from my own parents' divorce, right? The day they told me, I'll never forget. I was doing my spelling words. It was a Thursday. I was doing my spelling words. I also felt like I had to always continue to get 100 in order to make everybody happy, to keep them happy. So we also have a lot of shame around things that came very early in our childhood. It could be unworthiness, feelings of unworthiness, trauma, abuse, emotional abuse. Like there's so much in our childhood that will trigger that shame button. And that is all under the hood, as I say. But again, not a therapist, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Listen, same. But I think it's a really important part of the conversation because I do think that it is, it really does kind of fuel the grief or compound the grief when we feel shame.
Stops us from having the kind of healing conversations that we need to have and to heal and rebuild our self-esteem. You know, that's knocked sideways, even if it is your choice. You're out there again trying to have a new rest of your life.
That's right. So, okay. So how do we grieve a divorce? Like, how does that work? Is there a process? Is there like, you know, 5 steps to grieving your divorce? Like, lay it on us, Barry. Right.
I wish. What I will say is that I think you need to consciously lean in and make what I call a time on your calendar for grief tending. Maybe you are really sad that this happened and you need to do some introspection. So whether that, and you need to move grief through you in any way that you can, we're looking for movement forward. And what I mean by that is tears are movement, physical activity is movement, writing and journaling is movement, talking to a therapist is movement. Any activity in which you can feel movement forward. I always say tears are movement.
Yeah, I mean, so this is what you call grief tending. Yes,
grief tending like, and grief.
Oh,
and grief it's tending so- tools. Grief tending tools are just how do I weed and water the experience so that I have control over it and I don't have to come out of the weeds.
Yes,
without a plan.
So, I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because I always say that like in my divorce, like I was sort of, you know, grief is not the kind of thing we want to tend. Grief is the kind of thing that sort of societally, culturally, all of the things, just like naturally, we try to avoid, right? We're like, I don't want to feel that, right? And of course, you know, the only way to the other side is through it.
Yeah. But like the idea of like scheduling grieving on your calendar just sounds like the most counterintuitive like thing
because
in the world. And
it'll
I'm
come
aware,
find you.
That's
yeah, it'll
exactly
come find you.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. You know, I talk about after my divorce, it was, you know, 10 years of grief avoidance, right? But in that 10 years of grief avoidance, my alcohol consumption continued to grow and grow and grow. My right, like just like behaviors where I was not living a sort of really, you know, fulfilled or happy life, right? It was. And then what happened was, you know, I quit drinking and all of the grief was still there. It was just waiting. It was just waiting. It wasn't right. Like it had dissipated 1 ounce. It was just waiting.
Right. So if we don't look at it head on, like I said, it will grow like a weed around us and we're going to have to get out there, you know, when we wake up and look at it head on. You know, we don't sign up for this, you know, to happen to us, mm-hmm. but we can choose how we deal with it.
Yeah.
So you chose in the early days to numb and avoid, and we do that. We're really good
sure
at
did.
Using that as a coping skill. Sometimes we are in trauma and we may have a lot of avoidance.
There was a lot of trauma. A lot of trauma I wasn't facing or dealing with for sure.
Right. And it's hard to name. That's another thing that's hard to name until you know I need to take care of myself. And I'm realizing that this mm-hmm. isn't going away. And then you find the right kind of support for that. Mm-hmm. So I say grief tending because I think meeting it head on, like really looking at it, can help you confront it, befriend it, consciously become aware of ways in which if we do this, we can heal. So there aren't any, it's not a neat package. Gosh, I wish it were. Mm-hmm. I also think we don't realize that when we stuff it down, that it will show up in our body and come out sideways. So whether that's in dis-ease, illness, you know, you hear so much when we don't speak our truth. For example, my truth, I had nodes on my voice box and yes. had to have them surgically removed. And I thought, well, if that isn't a waving a flag for needing to speak my truth and having not spoken my truth, sometimes we're trying to protect children. Sometimes we're trying to protect ourselves from that shame. There's all different things that we do to quell and calm and nourish. You know, for some people, they move to food. And what we realize is the more that we avoid, the more that it even comes back, in my opinion, in a bigger tidal wave than the one that we needed to confront.
Yes, 100%. 100%. So grief tending can look like a number of things, right? You said, like journaling or meditating or just like setting time to cry. Like what are some other?
Yeah. I mean, I always say, you know, sometimes, you know, getting in the car from here to there and just like making yourself like your grief tending playlist, like put on the sad songs or put on the songs that may allow you to release your anger. I love that. Having a playlist.
Yes.
Listening to a podcast in the car can be grief tending. Any way to me in which you are confronting your grief, looking it straight on and saying, I need to deal with this, looking at emotions, right? Like, what mm-hmm. am I feeling today? I love a journal for that. I feel like you can lay down what you're feeling on the inside and look at it outside of yourself. And notice that it is, maybe it's not you. Maybe it is a part of you that you can find self-compassion for. I like the idea of creating a compassionate meditation where you just, maybe it's even guided, where you have something on that just reminds you, you know, you are okay. You are loved. You are on purpose. You are dynamic. You are, maybe there are affirmations. You know, you have to, there's no one way or right way. And that's the good news and the bad news about grief and grieving. Mm-hmm. So it's daunting because we don't have those, you know, five steps. And also it is kind of a creative endeavor in figuring out what feels good. So you try these things on and you say, what does journaling feel like? How do I feel before I start writing? And how do I feel after? What we know scientifically about writing, which I think is really interesting, is that when we write by hand, the prefrontal cortex responds in healing. So just knowing that this, setting a timer, let's say, and writing for 5 minutes in a journal, uninterrupted, automatic writing, just move that hand across the page, can help you respond in, help the body respond in healing, letting the autonomic nervous system know, I am okay. I am no longer in fight or flight. I don't need to be in protection mode. I can put it outside of myself. I also think when it's on the page and you see it, you're like, look at all that muck that was on the inside. So yes. I also think in so many ways, having a practice, you know, waking up and journaling and letting it go, sometimes it sounds like a whole lot of complaining, a whole lot of fear, a whole lot of junk. I think to myself, I was going to take that all with me. I was going to start my day with that. I'm up to here with all of that.
Yes.
And so if I clear it and start from zero, or at least close to zero, I can in some way show myself that, you know, call it the Windex of the day. I can show myself that I've done like a little bit of internal cleaning, cleansing, and I can start from a little bit of a, of a cleaner way.
And I think that's so important. Yes. And I think it's really important, especially as mothers, that we do that, right? Because, man, the amount of stress that we go through a divorce, and then, you know, we're grieving, we're angry, we have all, like you said, like all of this emotional muck in us. And like we hit the ground running with our kids. And like, yeah, we have shorter tempers. We might, you know, just, you know, parent in ways that we're like not necessarily that proud of. And by the way, that's totally fucking normal and okay. But also, right, there are ways, like if we can do that, I love that it's a Windex, right? If we can, if you can wake up 5 minutes earlier or take 5 minutes, like whatever it is, to just, you know, in the bathroom, in the, like, to just get that shit out.
There's a beautiful book. It's been around for ages. It's called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And I think part of getting a divorce is also finding, who am I on the other side? You've lost a sense of yourself in the world, a sense of who you are now, versus what you were before. Maybe because you're no longer a wife, you have big feelings about that. Maybe you don't know who you are in the workforce anymore. And so I think meeting yourself in a new, introspective, creative way can also be kind of interesting. I always recommend The Artist's Way. So as a practitioner, one of the things that Julia Cameron asks is that we do something called morning pages each day. And I always say she calls them morning pages to do upon waking. I say morning pages upon waking, but MOURNING. We are mourning. What we thought was our future. And so I think waking up and doing morning pages can not only unleash the grief, the anger, the confusion, but it can also elicit something creative in us, some kind of spark that can emerge. So once the bitch fest is done, or all the complaining or all the muck and all of that, there will be some little glimmer that comes through in your writing that's like, oh man, I do want to be a singer. I do want to date again. I do want to try that thing that he never wanted to do. You know, sometimes that the grief tending is just that, finding my creativity and doing the thing that he never wanted to do can be so stinking empowering.
Yes. And also like claiming who you are, right? I know that there were a lot of things that and this is very true, I think, in emotionally abusive relationships, which a lot of my listeners are in and I was in, right? That there are ways that they tell you that you are, that you start to believe, that are so not who you are, right? And so, but you've believed it for so long that process of writing and, like, as you said, just like finding who you actually are and like owning the truth of who you actually are.
It's a great prompt. Who am I? Who am I now? Who am I today? Who do I want to be?
Yeah.
You know, and prompts are everywhere. Some people look at the, you know, the white page and it's so daunting and it feels like I have to do something right. It feels like I have to be grammatically correct. Mm-mm. Nobody's ever reading your journal.
Mm-mm.
Nobody is ever reading your journal. Put it somewhere really good. A lock on a top drawer, hidden under a pile of books. I think that's what it is, that we feel as if we will be judged. This is such a beautiful, private, judgment-free place. I say, even name your inner critic. Julia Cameron calls hers Nigel, which cracks me up. She's like, oh, Nigel. So also the way that you're talking to yourself, and like you said, you've believed these messages from before. Maybe you're even telling yourself you're unworthy, you are ashamed, you are bad, you are, you know, start talking to yourself on the pages as if you were a friend. What would you tell a friend that was feeling this way? What would you write to her? So maybe you make up this beautiful, endearing name for yourself, like, you know, even little Barry, you know, like, what would you say to, you know, 11-year-old self, 15-year-old self, 20-year-old, like, what endearing advice would you have for her? Oh, sweetie, I see your pain, but you are a miracle. You are magical. You are going to be okay. Like, what if you told your body, your system that's listening to all the ways in which you talk to yourself, that you are a magical human being and you're going to be okay? And that might sound like I'm blowing smoke up your ass, but try it on. Start talking to yourself the way you would talk to a friend and see how it changes the way you feel in your body.
I love that. We're going to take one more quick break, and I want to talk a little bit more about morning pages and a few other things on the other side. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, so, you know, one of the things that Julia Cameron recommends, and it's been a while since I've read the book. The Artist State, yes, but no, it's the thing about morning pages and why do them in the morning, right?
I know. We should talk about it.
Right.
They're ego-free.
You're also closest to your unconscious state. Like if you just wake up and you roll over and grab your journal and just freeform write for 15 minutes.
But it's also Jungian theory that says that our ego doesn't wake until 30 to 40 minutes after we wake. So imagine writing ego free. What a gift.
What a gift. That's right. And you're closest to your unconscious.
And
you're closest to your true self. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's a really important thing because to mention, because, you know, if people don't go out and buy the book and they're like, oh, I'll just write, you know, for 30, you know, for 15 minutes totally. When I get home from dropping off the kids, like that's good. That's fine. But try it the second you wake up.
I agree. Have the notebook by the bedside. It also is a place to capture dreams. And quite often, if we don't do it right away, you know, knowing the internal story and vision that you have for yourself will quite often manifest in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
In the dreams.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. So, so, so good.
So ask me why in the morning. That would be really cool to say, why are they called morning pages?
why are they called morning pages, Barry?
When we write in the morning, we are writing on the edge of subconscious. So before we even open our phone, before we do anything else, even patter in to get a cup of coffee, even before meditation, if you have a practice, it is the time that we are closest to our ego-free selves. Julia Cameron says that Jungian theory is what brought her to introduce them as something we do upon waking, because it is the time in which we are ego-free. Imagine waking up before your ego wakes. And so you can write without judgment and freely on this edge of deep subconsciousness. And it is so freeing, and it will really tell you the truth of what is there. And so I say keep the notebook by the bedside and truly sitting up in bed, grabbing the pen, grabbing the page, and just writing. And she says three longhand pages. It's better than timing. I think we said, Julia, why three? She's like, one's not enough. Two is almost just right, and three kind of gets the job done. There's no science about why three. But I think somewhere around page one and a half, you will find that glimmer that I was talking about. And I use this shorthand in circling something that feels like, or making an asterisk or a mark, like something you want to go back to, because rereading the pages can be really difficult. We don't want to go back and sit in, you know, the muck, as I say. Sure. So we may want to revisit something that feels inspired or feels like an aha. And so I always say, use this little shorthand and of just marking it to come back to something that you want to revisit.
Yes.
And do it for a week. You don't have to buy the book. We're here to share the cliff notes of morning pages. So if you don't want to buy the book right now, or it feels too overwhelming to read something like that.
Yeah. Just do the practice.
Just do the practice. The other thing that she offers that I will also offer here, because I think it's an incredible practice, is something called the artist state. And the artist state is just making time for yourself on your calendar where you do something that's just for pure, unfettered joy. You go on a solo journey and you do something that brings you into that freedom and childlike state and into your creativity, into your zone of genius, if you will, where you just feel so on purpose and in your fun, and making that non-breakable time and date with yourself can really unveil and reveal something that is really, as I said, in your zone of genius. And maybe it's something you want to do on a larger scale. It really unfolds something that may be hiding. I believe we're all born creatives anyway, and somewhere along the way, somewhere, a teacher or an ex-husband maybe has told us that, that we are not good at something. And so we believe it. But when we start to do this practice, there's all of this uncovering of our own creative spirit and our creative genius. And I think creativity also is a great grief tending tool, painting, crafting, all of it. So juicy.
Yep. So juicy. I love it. All right. So Barry, tell people where they can find you, and if they want to learn more about this grief process and grieving through the divorce in a way that is maybe a little bit more guided and held and led by a professional such as yourself, where can they find you and all that you do?
Oh, so sweet. I'm at thememorycircle.com in all the places, and at the Memory Circle on Instagram. I hold writing groups, support groups. I meet with folks one-on-one. Sometimes I don't think we treat ourselves to the kind of coaching, the kind of support, the kind of guidance that we so deserve in this process, that that in and of itself is a form of healing. When we just make the time and space for ourselves to be held, and also in group to meet like-minded women. I think when we are seen and heard and witnessed in the kind of non-death loss that this kind of grief shows us in divorce, when I see, it's almost like seeing a line in a book that suddenly illuminates for you that, I see me, or I see that, or, you know, it's sort of a wisdom exchange. It's not fixing one another, but it's seeing yourself in a way that you may not be able to do on your own. It's such a beautiful way of being in the work.
100%. I think, you know, anytime women gather in community, we all come alive.
Yeah. We're lanterns. I always say, like, what I learn and I teach you, and you may be a little further ahead, and I may, you know, someone else may be a little in my rearview mirror, but we all, you know, walk each other through this process by sharing the truth of what is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have a free grief relief kit that is on your website. People can download that at thememorycircle.com. Yes?
Yes. Yes. I love giving out free tools and treats and anything that you need. And on my DM, on Instagram, I am always full of writing prompts, and I am always so amazed at folks who have never written before that find a writing practice to be a beautiful tool for them through the divorce process. And I say, if you're writing, you're a writer.
Yes, agree. Barry, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure having this conversation with you. And I know that it's going to make a lot of women, it's going to give them a lot of empowered tools to help them through this process. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at the Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.